Hello, and welcome to this podcast from the Oxford Institute for Energy Studies.
Hello, and welcome to this latest OIES podcast, which is brought to you by the GAS programme. My name is James Henderson. I'm head of GAS research here at OIES, and with me today, I have a colleague and senior research fellow, Patrick Heather, who is here to talk about his latest paper entitled European Traded Gas Hubs, Their Continued Relevance. Before we start, I'll just date stamp the podcast. We're recording it on the 7th of July, 2023 in the afternoon UK time. Patrick, welcome back to the podcast.
It's a pleasure, Jim. Thank you.
Okay, well, look, let's start with a high-level question. You've covered this topic of European gas hubs in a number of papers for us. So just tell our listeners how many hubs there are, which are the key ones, and what your paper analyses about them.
Yes, indeed. I've been following the liberalisation and development of the traded gas hubs since the NBP started in 1996. And when I started researching this about 10, 15 years ago with the Institute, pretty much every European Union member state now has a hub of some sort, if only for balancing, because that's a legal requirement. There are very few exceptions, but in total, in 2022, there were some 25 hubs across all of Europe. You asked about the key hubs. The key hubs are, let's start with the first one, the British NBP, first started trading in 1996. The Dutch TTF, which for about 6-7 years now has become the most liquid hub in Europe, and then followed some way behind by the German, the French, Austrian, and Italian hubs. And as I say, pretty much every country has one, but the importance gets less and less. So in all of my papers on the development of these hubs, I analyse what I've called the five key elements and the three main indicators. I'm sure we'll get back to that.
Okay, brilliant. Well, look, the title of your paper is about the continued relevance of those hubs in Europe, which suggests that this relevance has been challenged. Has there been a question about how useful the hubs really are, and what kind of catalysed that doubt?
Yes, indeed. When the prices on the wholesale gas markets rose markedly in late 2021, and demand came back after COVID, etc., a lot of reasons that myself and my fellow colleagues have already written about, and then the Russian invasion of Ukraine in 2022, all this led to very high levels of volatility in the trading markets, and not just gas, but especially so in the gas markets. And of course, at that point, the politicians in pretty much all the European countries were put under pressure by their electorate. And basically, they sanctioned financial help of one kind and another for the energy users in the form of subsidies, rebates, etc. But this very soon led them, and broadly speaking, led the European Commission to doubt whether the traded markets were functioning correctly. They could see high prices, and they were upset by the high prices. The consumers are upset. So upset consumers don't vote for politicians. So this is really, and I'm being a bit flippant here, but I think it's quite obvious what happened. This eventually led to their imposing a so-called price cap on the wholesale price of the reference TTF hub. Everyone was happy for the TTF to be the reference hub until that point, and now they were doubting whether this still actually was a true reference, and subsequently that price cap has been extended to other hubs. Although it must be said that the level of the cap has so far not been triggered. We haven't reached that level.
Okay, well, we'll come back to the question of government intervention. But before we do that, tell me what measures you use to quantify the relevance of a hub, and also where do you get your data from?
Okay, well, as I mentioned, I used what I call the five key elements, which are how many active traders there are at each of the hubs, what products are traded and in what volumes individually, and what are the total traded volumes. I, for several years now, have also included the so-called emerging hubs, the much smaller hubs that have started trading in the last 3, 4, 5 years. Then there's something called the ICIS, used to be the Heron ICIS Tradability Index. And finally, the one that I consider maybe the most relevant, the most important, is the churn rate, because in that one metric, you essentially, if there is a high churn rate, there will be a lot of traders trading. They'll be trading a number of products across the curve, and the traded volumes will be high. So you asked where I get the data from. I use the OTC data from ICIS, and I collect the exchange data directly from ICE, from EEX, and the other European gas exchanges. So I get the data from the horse's mouth, so to speak, and then spend a lot of time putting it all in order and in tables and then analysing it. For my three main indicators, which are the political will, cultural attitudes, and commercial acceptance of the market, I use a proxy, which is the report published annually by the European Federation of Energy Traders, EFET, and they assess 5 regulatory conditions, 5 TSO conditions, 6 market conditions. So essentially what I'm looking for in the political will, et cetera. So that saves me doing a lot of far less subjective analysis. They do it for me. So that's where I get the data, and that's how I can tell which hubs are being used, especially those like TTF, which are traded along the curve, which means that they're not just being used for balancing nearby spot trading, but also for risk management further down the curve.
Okay, so let's get on to those results then. So kind of, you've kind of touched on TTF, but which hubs really stand out as the most liquid and therefore, I guess, relevant, and which are the kind of poor relations, so to speak?
Well, I think, look, I can answer that really quite quickly by putting it into probably just one sentence. TTF is by far the most liquid hub. It accounted in 2022 for about 76% of all European gas trading, of which 56% of all OTC trading and 81% of all exchange trading. After TTF, there is a substantial drop to the second most traded hub, the NBP, a further big drop to the German THE, and again a drop to the French TRF. And between them, those top 4 hubs account for 95% of all traded volumes across all of Europe. So I think that puts it into perspective. You know, the numbers don't lie. Whichever way you cut it and look at it, TTF is therefore the most relevant. There are other things I mention in the paper that if people want to read more, which I substantiate by referencing various other articles and sources. TTF has been used as a pricing marker for pipeline gas, for LNG coming into Europe. It is the most relevant hub across certainly Western, Northwestern, Western Europe, but increasingly across all of Europe.
So I guess that kind of begs the question, what is the role of the smaller hubs? I mean, you mentioned the sort of huge drop-off from TTF and the sort of top 5 or so. Why do the smaller hubs exist? What's their relationship with TTF? And how do customers use them?
I mentioned briefly just before balancing. This is why, in a sense, the hubs were set up in the first place, directly or indirectly. The NBP, the National Balancing Point, which incidentally, when it was first thought up, was called the Notional Balancing Point, and a lot of European hubs call themselves a virtual trading point. So you can see the link there. It's all a question of safety. You have to have the right pressures in the grid. You have to have enough gas to be able to flow it through, and people can take it out at the other end of whatever the distance the pipeline is. But you can't have too much gas for safety reasons. And it is up to the transmission system operator, the TSO, to control this. And when it got to a liberalized market, as opposed to the incumbent gas company in each country that did everything from import to standardizing the quality and then distributing it, etc. As you liberalize the market, you need to still have that very important safety aspect. And essentially then, the most important thing in a traded market is to have the balancing. And that was enshrined not only in the British Network Code, but enshrined in the European directives as well. And they have a suite of network codes, one of which is to do with balancing. And that's the first code that was agreed across all the member states. So that is the most important role that these hubs play. And that's why every, with 3 exceptions in Europe, 3 countries that don't actually have a hub as such themselves, but they rely on their neighbors. That's why it's so important that you have this hub just to do the balancing. And then beyond that, they can maybe trade a bit more, maybe trade some spot for this week, next month. But it's all about moving towards that final balanced position. And that is the big difference with the TTF, but also to a slightly less extent, the NBP and the German hub, and maybe even a bit the French hub, where some trading is done more on a hedging basis, or a risk management basis, but especially the TTF. But yeah, it's all about balancing. That's the role of all the hubs, and that's the role of the smaller hubs. That's why they have to exist.
So basically, suppliers are trading small packets of gas at these balancing points to ensure that the system pressure is kept at a safe level. And as they're doing that, of course, they are referring back to prices being set at the bigger hubs, the TTF particularly. And you've done some work in the past on the correlations between TTF and prices at other hubs. Are those correlations, even at the times when TTF was being criticised, have those correlations stayed very strong?
They, by and large, have stayed very strong, very tight. There have been some small exceptions, and those variances have changed in literally several times in the last 18 months or so. Again, I mentioned in my paper, there has been a necessity for Europe to find gas to replace the imports from Russia, because for various reasons we won't go into now, we haven't got time, there have been limitations on the importation of Russian pipeline gas. And therefore, there was a rush to get LNG, liquefied natural gas, coming into Europe. And I explain it in one of the chapters in my paper that in particular in France, in Belgium, then France, the Netherlands, Britain, and to a lesser extent Spain, these extra volumes of LNG coming into the country have created not only a bit more volumetric trading at those hubs, because obviously when you regasify the gas to bring into the system, unless it's on some sort of long-term contract, or if it's been brought in by one of the portfolio players or an aggregator, whatever, it will probably then be sold spot at the hub and bought spot at the hub. So that's increased the volumes. And it has also slightly distorted what was extremely tight correlation in prices across especially Northwest Europe, to the point, in fact, where the European Union were looking into that only a few years ago and asking the question, why is gas in Austria the same price as gas in the Netherlands when there is a transportation difference? Well, there are a whole raft of reasons for that. But those little differences started to appear, but especially between the LNG importing countries. The other countries, though, remained very tight correlation.
Okay, I mean, you've mentioned NBP, and maybe we could talk a little bit about that. How has the role of NBP changed? I mean, obviously, we've had Brexit, and so the UK market's been slightly separated. But in the recent crisis, obviously, the importance of the UK was increased as it became something of a bridge to Europe for imported LNG, which, again, you've touched on. I mean, has that role made any difference? And, you know, have we seen price differentials between NBP and TTF, for example?
Yes and yes. That role has made a difference in the sense that NBP's volumes have been falling for the last 6 years. NBP used to be the main reference hub for Europe. But of course, as soon as TTF gained in importance and was becoming more and more liquid, not surprisingly, European shippers would want to trade a euro-denominated hub rather than a sterling-denominated hub. Why would you bring in an extra factor in your risk management, the currency factor? So from 2016, TTF just slightly overtook NBP in total traded volumes, but then raced ahead. NBP held on for another 3 or 4 years. It lost a little bit, but it was, you know, TTF was marching on. But in the last 3 years, the volumes of NBP have been falling. What the imports, the extra imports, and there were a lot of extra imports into Britain last year, they, I think, stopped the decline in NBP. I think the decline would have been greater had we not had those extra LNG imports, which were regasified and went straight across the interconnector to Belgium or indeed to the Netherlands. So, yes, it did make a difference to the importance of NBP. I mean, it stopped it from falling further. And also, the NBP played a very important role in bringing this extra gas into Europe generally.
Okay, well, so NBP then sort of in decline. Do you see any emerging new hubs that you think are going to become more important over time? I mean, will different regional hubs emerge? Maybe Southeast Europe, you've mentioned Germany. What's the prognosis?
Yeah, I mean, look, I wrote a whole paper, I don't know, a few years ago, on the Iberian Peninsula. If people are interested, then they can look it up on our website. And, you know, there was a time in 2017-ish, something like that, where I thought, well, look, there is a chance here, because at that time, Spain really was, you know, it's an LNG-sourced country. And there was talk of increasing the capacity, pipeline capacity between Spain and France to go south to north rather than north to south. You know, again, the EU was looking at how to strengthen the imports of gas into Europe, and this was an idea. The conclusion of that paper was that it was unlikely to happen, but there was a sort of subsidiary conclusion, which was potentially Italy might provide that importation route because of the Azeri gas coming into the heel of Italy, although very small volumes in relation to the needs for Western Europe, but also their LNG imports. Neither has happened since. And from my point of view, as an ex-trader and looking at this from a trading point of view, a commercial point of view, you don't need any more reference hubs. You only need one marker hub, maybe two, because it's a different currency like the NBP. And I think the NBP still has a use because it is a sterling hub. But, you know, if you've got euros across pretty much all of Europe, not all, I know, but I think that's enough. Now, having said that, because of the actual geography and because of the physical structure of pipelines and everything, there is still a possibility that there could be a hub maybe in Southeast Europe. There has been talk about this for the best part of the last 10 years. Greece initially wanted to be the Southeast European hub. They only actually started trading actively, I mean, very small volumes, but actually trading only in 2022, having had a hub for many years. Hungary has suggested they could be a sort of transit point for the South. Romania has, and in fact, the joint venture to get gas from the Black Sea has just received FID, and that would bring extra volumes of physical gas into Romania. They would become an exporter by 2027-28. You know, and again, there have been some pipeline reinforcements, north-south, Greece, Bulgaria, Romania, and east-west, Bulgaria, Hungary, Romania, Hungary, and also TAP. So there is a possibility of something happening in that region. But you've got to remember that the actual consumption of gas in those countries is so small relative to Central or certainly Western Europe. So I think there is a role to play. Whether a hub can develop to such an extent that it could become a reference price, possibly. But, you know, if you take your cue from the oil and the oil products markets in particular, there is Northwest European quotes for heating oil and fuel oil and whatever. There are also Mediterranean quotes. But what's the one that trades in most quantity? It's Northwest Europe. And that is the price marker, even if it's for delivery into the Med. Some people choose Med. So I think it's a very open question, and I can't entirely answer your question, but there is a possibility that there may be a hub in Southeast Europe in due course.
Okay, well, look, let's come back to focusing on Northwest Europe then and TTF. So you've talked about how the EU moved to intervene and set a price cap, which is in place, albeit a much higher level than today's prices. Can you explain, kind of, you've sort of touched on the fact why they felt the need to intervene for consumers' perspective. But in reality, I think we've analysed this around, you know, congestion at the hub. And, you know, can you talk a bit about what you think the price differential between TTF and landed LNG prices was, and whether you think that problem's now gone away, and whether the whole question of kind of political interference in prices has now kind of dissipated?
Unfortunately, I think politicians, once they've got a bee in their bonnet, they will continue banging away at that. But look, yeah, let's answer the question. So LNG was necessary to fill the gap for having less pipeline. Obviously, there's a cost to liquefy the gas to make it LNG. There's a cost of transportation. There is a landing cost. There's a potentially a storage cost in tank if it stays there for any length of time. And then there's a regasification cost and an entry cost into the grid. So this is not surprising, therefore, that all other things being equal, that the cost of LNG coming into the grid is likely, most of the time, to be dearer when it comes into the grid, or to have cost more to get to that point than pipeline gas that is travelling less distance from a European or a country neighbouring to Europe, as in Russia. And I think what the politicians have failed to understand, there is actually this extra cost that occurs. Someone's got to pay for it. The second point is they have also failed to recognise, and some of my colleagues at the Institute have written in great detail about this, Mike Forward, Jack Sharples, for example, about the congestion. And we've got to remember that the history of gas in Europe has been one of either local indigenous production in each country, of France, Germany, Netherlands, Britain. We all had indigenous production and other countries as well, without going to the full list. But more and more in the last certainly 10, 15 years, more and more volumes were coming from Russia. And it was an east to west transportation that was built up originally in the 60s, then 70s, 80s, and even into the 90s. New pipeline capacities were introduced going east to west. There was very little west to east capacity available, or even possible. The compressors were not set up to push the gas towards the east. A lot of work had to be done. And now, all of a sudden, we want to bring more LNG in. And again, there wasn't enough actual physical pipeline capacity to bring this extra LNG at all times into the places where it was needed, in particular into Germany, which in the last 18 months suffered most from the lack of Russian pipeline gas. Now, to some extent, that has already been alleviated. An awful lot of work has been done by trying to improve some of the bottlenecks. Germany has started building and has built FSRUs and other LNG import facilities. They've increased capacity. Some of the existing LNG terminals in France, along the Channel and Baltic coasts, have increased capacities or are about to increase their capacities. So a lot of work is being done. And I think the whole system will definitely be more resilient as near as a year's time. There will be probably somewhere near an extra 20 BCM coming into Germany from LNG by the end of this year. And that really is, it's not going to replace all the pipeline gas that they've lost, but it makes a huge difference. So I think prices are, or they should start to stabilize anyway. The convergence of the hubs should remain fairly good. Other things could see that change, but as I see it at the moment, it should narrow again. And I don't think we have to worry as much. And as I mentioned, the price cap that is actually set at a lower price than the highest prices we saw in the rally that we had in late 21 and into early 22, that has, you know, the prices are way, way, way below that price cap at the moment. It does mean to say that if we have a difficult winter ahead, it could be touched again. I think we're okay. I mean, will the EU try and intervene again? I don't know. There have been some other things that have happened recently that I think will probably counteract that anyway.
Okay, great. So, I mean, look, you also touch in your paper on kind of the TTF's place in global gas markets. I think you compare it with the kind of US and Asian sort of hubs, if you like. So do you see TTF having a global role? And if so, just give us a brief kind of comparison with the US and Asia.
Yes. Look, before I answer that question, Jim, I've just thought of one important thing on the previous one. TTF has been traded on the ICE exchange on their Dutch subsidiary, ICE Endex. And of course, that is subject to EU law and regulations. And if the prices went so high as to threaten the price cap being triggered, they would have to comply with the European law, and therefore they would have to stop their members from trading on the exchange if it reached that price. So what the ICE exchange have done is that by using their London-based ICE Europe company, they have just opened a absolutely parallel fungible contract, TTF contract in London. And traders can trade whichever platform they trade on is exactly the same thing. And of course, what would happen is if the price ever got near the price cap, traders, including European-based traders, would just transact on the London Exchange. And therefore, they would be able to continue risk managing, trading, etc. And you would have a true relevant price of gas at any given time based on supply and demand. And that would be the price of TTF. Now coming to your global markets. Yes, for I think since 2019, I've been comparing TTF to Henry Hub, which is the North American reference price. I mean, there are other hubs in North America, including in particular, let's say, Alberta Hub in Canada, which are very important and they trade a lot. But Henry Hub is the reference, and it does price a lot of underlying gas in the US. All the gas in Mexico is priced against Henry Hub. And it is estimated that even nowadays, somewhere between 40, 50, maybe even 60% of Canadian gas is still priced at Henry Hub, although the Canadian hubs are gaining more and more in importance in pricing their own gas. So I've compared it against that. And I've also brought into the analysis the Japanese Korea marker, JKM, which is the Platts published marker price. It's not really a traded hub. It's not a hub. It's a price assessment. There is the Platts market on close, which is actual prices. And I explain in my several papers what I've talked about this, that what the difference is with Henry Hub and with TTF. But, you know, it's still interesting to compare. And a lot of LNG is priced against JKM. TTF actually fares extremely well. You know, even when I first started doing this in 2019, I think from memory, the TTF churn then, it's done on a slightly different calculation, and it's all explained methodology, it's all explained in my papers. The churn then was about 19. So, you know, still well above the 10 times, which I call mature. I have also said that when it goes a bit higher, then I call it liquid and then very liquid. So Henry Hub is very liquid. Actually, the churn on Henry Hub has been going down recently, and it's only a little bit, but it's gone down about 10 points. But in 2022, Henry Hub against US consumption alone was 49.7 times. If you include Mexico, 47.2. And if you include Canada, 40.9. TTF was 22.6. So that is liquid. I mean, you know, it really is up there. British NBP fell a little bit lower, 8.3. And then the Asian, if you use JKM against China, Japan, Korea, Taiwan, imports of LNG, it's under one. It's estimated at about 0.8, something like that. In fact, probably less than 0.8. So that puts it into perspective, and it shows you that TTF really is, on a global scale, it is also a mature liquid reference hub. And it's discussed in the paper, but TTF is used in the pricing of a number of LNG contracts.
Okay, Patrick, that's great. Thanks. We've come to the end of our time now. So thank you so much for your insights. It's been a great discussion, and I recommend our listeners go and download your paper from our website if they want more of the details, which it's certainly packed with. With that, though, thank you to everyone for listening. Look out for another podcast on the gas program at OIS in a couple of weeks' time. Take care of yourselves and goodbye.
Thank you for listening to this podcast from the Oxford Institute for Energy Studies. You can find other podcasts, as well as our written research, on our website at www.oxfordenergy.org. If you would like more details about our energy transition, gas, oil, electricity, or China research programs, then please contact us at information@oxfordenergy.org.